With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, you're listening to The Alt in Our Stars, Billboard.com's rock and alternative music podcast. I'm your host, Chris Payne. I'm a correspondent on staff at Billboard.com. I read a lot about rock and alternative. But one thing that's been interesting me a lot lately is how the term alternative can apply to different kinds of music, not just guitar music, not just rock music. And today I want to try something different with the podcast. We're going to do a country podcast, talk about how alternative country sits alongside regular old mainstream country music, because I think even regular old country music has been changing a lot recently. So I had two other writers on for this episode, Caitlin White and Nick Murray, and I really learned a lot from these guys, and I think you will too. We talked a lot about how the genre is changing, where it's headed in the future, just what country music we've been into lately, and I really learned a lot from them. So as always with the podcasts, I definitely welcome feedback, positive, negative, whatever. You can hit me up on Twitter at cpayne on a plane. You can email me chris.payne@billboard.com, or you can just leave a comment in the comments section. Really anything works. However you're listening to this podcast, thank you so much. And here it is, Alt in Our Stars, country music. So yeah, we're talking country today. New uncharted territory for the Alt in Our Stars. I'm here with Caitlin White.
Hi.
Caitlin, who writes for Stereo Gum. And freelancer extraordinaire, Nick Murray.
What's going on? Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming down, guys. I am looking forward to seeing where this conversation goes. Because this podcast, I want to really explore what the meaning of alternative means across all different genres. And I've definitely approached that the most with like rock and alternative music. I really don't think I've approached country much at all in this podcast yet.
Well, a lot of people are approaching country who have never approached it before.
You think so, huh?
Kind of exciting.
Yeah, I think because it can be such a nebulous thing trying to talk about just country in one podcast. So I want to make this more towards where the genre is going, where it's headed in the past, you know, since the start of this year, since the start of 2015. So to get going, first of all, tell me how each of you just got into country music and how you started writing about it.
Well, I got into country music when I was in middle school. I was like friends with this girl who was in her early 20s, and she was really into country, and I was like very like indie rock and like hated it and thought it was stupid. But she like really got me into popular country, like Garth Brooks, like up until like current time, and I really fell in love with it like through seeing her love for it and through like actually listening to it and realizing that it was like really important. Which it's totally just that one girl that got me into it, and then I started like exploring more on my own. But I think I was a little bit more open to it because I was like really into folk and other like older forms of country through my parents, so I definitely also had that bridge of being like into like the alt or the folk and the more commercial country. But for me, I really enjoy both, although I did also face that original divide.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up in a small town in Oregon called McMinnville.
Okay.
And for me, I think it was like country kind of surrounded me, even if I wasn't listening to it. Like it'd catch my ear and I'd be like, oh, this Brooks and Dunn song is dope. or like this Brad Paisley song is actually pretty good. And my parents listened to like a Lucinda Williams type country music, right, or like older country music. And then at a certain point, I was like, I don't know, maybe I read something that I liked or heard Miranda Lambert and was like, all right, I need to like listen to more of this and kind of figure out what it is. And it happened when I went to New York, I think. I was like a little distanced from like my hometown.
Which was where?
It's on like the Rhode Island, Connecticut border, like that side of Connecticut.
Okay.
Which is more country than people might expect.
Yeah, I think a lot of locales in America would be more country than people expect. Because it's a stereotype of which is the South. But I think, you know, there's more rural areas across, like, or it could be suburban areas too, like all across America. In New Jersey, where I grew up, country was really popular in South Jersey.
Well, I think that a lot of people kind of wrongly pigeonhole country as just a Southern thing. Like, country music is very much more about a working class mentality and sort of working class people. And it kind of functions as an antithesis to like a lot of like the other like huge pop kind of ideas about wealth and like trying to be like really polished or just talking about like a totally different kind of lifestyle. Like, I always really, really related to country music because my dad was like a garbage man and he was like in a truck and that was like his job. And so for me, that was like very much the norm. So this idea of like loving trucks or whatever, which has become something that a lot of people like malign country for, like that was part of his lifestyle and therefore my lifestyle, you know? So like there really was a connection there for me. And we're not from the South, but that's like a very real part of my like family's history.
Yeah, New York City is the biggest country market in the country, which surprises people. And it used to have the biggest country.
You're not joking.
No,
you're being dead serious.
It's true.
And like, yes, in the 70s, WHN, New York's country station, was the biggest country station in the country and very influential in breaking people, like Kenny Rogers breaking into pop radio and that sort of MOR country. Kind of 70s pop country.
Mm-hmm.
It was very influential in spreading that outside of country.
Okay, and MOR country is a popular radio country?
Yeah, well, like the like Kenny Rogers or like that kind of smoother, like soft rock country kind of a moment around 1980.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, there's the New York country station. I think it was the second biggest station in New York. After CBS, the pop station.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of records began to travel from the country station to the pop station. And from that pop station, around the country.
Mm.
So it was this weird like focal point, I guess.
Right, right. Yeah, I definitely want to get more into country radio and crossing over and that kind of stuff later on. To get through some more of the introduction of this and about the genre and how people who work within country take it. I'm wondering, do you guys, when you write about country, do you often find yourselves having to sort of come correct about your credentials and covering it, your experience?
It's such a weird thing because when I started off as a music writer, I wouldn't even tell people that I liked country. This was like 3 years ago. And like, I was around people that were like very into like indie rock and had this very like very strong idea of the canon and like what music was worth covering. And like, and this was like, pop wasn't a part of that either. So like,
and this is just 3 years ago. This you're
is
saying
just
this?
3 years huh. ago. I really felt like I kind of wanted to hide the fact that I liked country music. And so I worked for AOL and I would write country posts for The Boot and I would cover like pop for their pop blog too. But like, I really tried to like make my identity as a writer, like in indie rock, because I thought that's what I had to do, like in order to like make it as like a music
writer. Prove yourself. I felt
exactly.
the same way.
You did?
And I was genuinely into it. Like, indie rock was my favorite genre
right.
of music when I started my internship, started writing about things. And then I think it could be tied into poptimism with how people are just more open-minded to genres of music, often more popular, that were maligned, not thought like worthy of being written about, and people are more maybe thinking, hey, if like pop or really popular R&B is, you know, if we're more open-minded to that now as we should be, why not country?
Right. Well, it's just really interesting that I suddenly, when I did start writing about it And I suddenly realized that I like had this wealth of knowledge that like other people didn't have, because I've been listening to it since I was 12. So I'm 27. That's 15 years. Like, that's a long time. And it's just, it's really weird, because there are a lot of people who this is a major blind spot for them. And in that sense, I'm really happy that it's coming to the forefront, because I think it's just a wonderful like genre to be like familiar with. So people that who like maybe used to be scared kind of in a way that I was, even as someone who liked it, have the chance to be open to it. Like, that's really cool to me.
Yeah. And I think, well, like for me, it might've been similar in that I didn't think I knew a lot about it. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, country's, you know, the recorded history of country is almost 100 years old. So it's like, I was like, I'm not a country expert, because I don't know what happened in 1950. But I was like, wait, I know more about country than like pretty almost every other writer. And I started getting assigned stories about it. And I was like, okay, this is a thing.
Yeah, it's interesting, because in one part we're talking about how everyone wants, when you're new with something like something as like close knit as writing about music, you want to be accepted and you want to like sort of prove that you belong when you're new. So it's like maybe indie rock or certain kinds of hip hop are viewed as the things that are held in such high esteem. But then on the flip side, like, you want to also be getting work and you want to be writing awesome stories. And there's so much competition in indie rock, but then in country, it's like, huh, I can just sort of run this, right?
That's the secret.
Yeah.
I don't know if we might have to delete that.
Yeah, yeah. Might have to edit that part.
Well, I'm just going to be really upfront about this. There weren't assignments for country music. Like, people weren't assigning like long profiles on Eric Church and Miranda Lambert like they have started to. Like, it wasn't cool. Like, people weren't doing it. And I think what really helped break the water is people like Sturgill Simpson or the Jason Isbells, like these kind of like people right on the line who kind of made country seem cool, because they were also alt and they were also like really incredible songwriters. But because people kind of like started listening to those and they were like, well, maybe I'll try Eric Church, you know, or like maybe I'll try Miranda Lambert, or, and then that was sort of like a gateway drug. Like, that's kind of what I think, that like alt country is a gateway drug for people to be like, well, this isn't that far off from the commercial one, and like see how they can appreciate that as well.
Is that so new though? Because like, I remember when I was first getting into indie rock, this is like mid-2000s, I listened to stuff people called alt country, like Nico Case or the Old 97s or Drive-By Truckers. I feel like this is that world has kind of existed outside of country, kind of maybe parallel to it for a while.
Yeah, but I don't think people considered, like, I think the critical shift has changed. Like, people would consider that like acceptable to cover and like be a critic and like think that there might be merit, like artistic merit in it. But they didn't shift that to like the mainstream. And I think now that they are shifting that critical merit to the mainstream country. And that's the big difference.
Okay.
But you're right. Like, alt country has been cool for a long time.
Yeah. And a lot of people like get stuck in alt country. Like, yes, that's my experience more of people like finding like, I don't know, Nico Case, who you mentioned and who's awesome. But then like, well, this is like the real country that I'm listening to. So like, you know, I'm not going to listen to Luke Bryan or whoever. So I haven't noticed people using it as a gateway, but if that's happening, then I think that's really cool.
What I've noticed the most in someone who didn't really listen to much of any country music prior to maybe 12 calendar months ago, what I've noticed in working for Billboard, following music journalism, we've gone a good amount, maybe 10 minutes of this podcast so far without dropping her name, but I think it was just Casey Musgraves that was making people pay attention more. I think that's what's causing it. A lot of it.
Yeah, she definitely might be a gateway for a lot of people into, I don't know, country that's on the radio, or like away from all country or towards all country, maybe for like people that aren't from our background. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think Casey is huge for that. And I think a lot of it is because of her politics. Like, she has a political stance that is very opposite. I don't know how many like arena country shows that you guys go to, but like, every single one, they shout out the audience for whichever one of their radio hits is number one. They shout out the troops. they shout out something about American pride. Like, you'll see people like hauling their flags down there. Like, these are kind of like very conservative ideas that like a lot of people our age are totally turned off by. So if you have even an artist whose music you like and they're saying stuff like this, like, that can be really hard to reconcile. So you have Casey, who's like, let's smoke pot, gay marriage, which aren't like new ideas by any means, but coming from someone who makes music like her and how it sounds, it's just like this perfect storm of like, oh, I agree with her politically, and this is like alt country, and this is like kind of close to mainstream. It's just like she really like got kind of like the trifecta there, I think.
Yeah, and she is, like she says that, like, her hero is like Emmylou Harris, and like she's listening to the alt country, I guess, and I think sees more of herself in that than in like the, like salute the troops
mm-hmm.
sort of thing.
You won't hear that kind of like discourse from her like at all, which is really interesting and probably part of the reason why she won't really break into the mainstream. Like, the country audience, I think, is still very conservative for mainstream, like, radio country.
From what I've heard, though, from listening to, like, our Nashville correspondents, just discussions at Billboard, seems like Nashville really wants to make her happen. Country music industry.
Yeah.
Has a lot of support.
It's interesting. Like, I mean, we, like, I don't know, read a lot of interviews with country artists and talk to them a lot, or, like, talk to... Like, I helped with, in the Billboard Nashville power issue, I talked to a bunch of songwriters.
Power 100?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, I think, like, I mean, maybe it's, like, people just say this as a way to, like, kind of disavow themselves from what's actually happening in country music, but everyone is, like, we're all about Kacey Musgraves, we're all about Brandi Clark.
Mm-hmm.
We're sick of trucks. And then it's like, oh, okay. Are you?
Mm.
They're not sick of money, I guess.
They're
but,
not sick of paychecks.
Yeah. But, yeah, there is, I think some people in New York think that, like, have this idea of Nashville as being, like we don't want, like, Kacey Musgraves makes us uncomfortable. We want to do the safe thing. But I think people in Nashville, I mean, I'm from New York, too. So I'm not totally on the pulse of what's happening there. But I think people in Nashville, like, within what we think of as, like, the radio, country, mainstream country, very much do, like, want that to happen. And are maybe, like, embarrassed that it's not happening more and that people from New York are, like, kind of disappointed in them, maybe.
Yeah, and there was a quote from this country radio executive named Keith Hill that made its rounds. Do you know what I'm talking? You're already laughing.
Of course I know.
The comment he made that, in talking about why there aren't many women like Kacey on the country charts, he compared it's like a salad, and the female artists are just like the little tomatoes in the salad. And he just said straight up, like, yeah, we make more money, we get more listeners when we just have more male artists.
Right. The men are the lettuce and women are just the salad accessories. Well, I think that's the problem with what you're saying, Nick, because I think there is a huge population of people there who feel that way, but they don't have any power. They aren't the ones who own the record labels, or they aren't the ones who are these radio executives. Like, those are still pretty much like conservative white guys. Like, across the board, if you look through Nashville's like business kind of rankings, like, you'll see this again and again. It's a bunch of old white guys. Like, it's the old boys club that Kacey talks about on probably my favorite song on her new record. And that's the problem, is that although a lot has happened in the music industry to take power away from labels and radio structure, in country, that's still very much a part of who succeeds there. And if you're not making money, you could, like, Brandi Clark is, like, beloved, but, like, she makes money from writing songs for other people. Like, she helped write Toby Keith's, one of his new singles, Drunk Americans.
And that's what, it baffles me how it took them so long to just let Kacey be a solo artist. Because she did that for years before they let her do her debut album.
Yeah. Same with Ashley Monroe. It's the mm-hmm. same thing. And even Brandy, or Angelina Presley, who's one of the Pistolanis. Like, they have been in Nashville for years upon years. They're super talented, but they're maybe not the exact thing that people think they're going to see when they go to, like, a country arena show, you know? Like, you won't see a quiet spoken woman with a guitar playing a slow song. Like, it has to be the big amped up Jason Aldean song, you know? Mm.
The Tomatoes remark is, well, like, so it appeared in this trade publication called, like, Country Air Check Weekly. And I think it might have been the issue before. It's, like, really interesting and a really good trade publication. And, like, a week before, 2 weeks before, they had this really awesome seminar. And, like, the whole issue was devoted to, like, women in country music. And, like, they had one of the women from Little Big Town and, like, three radio executives. And, like, had a really thoughtful exchange about this issue. And then, like, the next issue that like, quoted this idiot. Or, I mean, this guy.
Okay. You're like, we're going in. This guy.
Who said this idiotic thing. And I think I'd recommend that people that's heard this and were outraged and want to know more, like, look for the previous issue with the seminar or the exchange or whatever. That was much more thoughtful and a much more dynamic perspective from within Nashville about it.
It makes me wonder, because is this what the people want? When you go to a country show, from what I've seen lately, it seems like it's not just like a bunch of guys, or I don't know who would want to just see like a bunch of male singers, if it would be guys or girls, but does it even reflect the demographic who consumes country music and what they want to just have like 90% dudes?
I think that's like what we ask ourselves all the time. Like, it's really hard to parse, because this is what the stats consistently show, that yeah, this is what people want. And yeah, I just went to Kenny Chesney and Jason Aldean. I actually reviewed it for Billboard. And there's tons of women there, and there's tons of teen girls there, and there's tons of teen boys there, and there's tons of grandparents there. Like, this is, I mean, Chesney is like a legend, so he has a very deep fan base, but and even for me, like, I love Ashley Monroe and Kacey Musgraves, and like, I'm a feminist and this is like something I care about a lot, but I also love Jason Aldean. I don't want Jason Aldean to go away. I just want there to be like equality or like diversity or like something, because every other artist leading up to him, Cole Swindle and like Brantley Gilbert, like, they're all kind of in the same category. And I just wish that there was more than one category that was also success.
It's cool that Kacey Musgraves' first national tour was opening the big Kenny Chesney Arena or football stadium thing. This was 2 years ago? Was she opening? I think so.
I don't remember exact details, but I know that Chesney like handpicks who opens for him. So that's cool that he had her. I didn't actually know that.
Yeah.
And for reference, I just looked at the country top singles right now, the Billboard chart, and number 1 through 12 are all men.
It's always like that.
Yeah. Well, Kelsey Ballerini topped it fairly recently, so that was an outlier that happened not too long ago. But now the top one is Cam at 13 and Maddie and Tay at 14. But yeah, that's 1 through 12. So yeah, is that something you guys see at least moving somewhat in the right direction, maybe slowly?
I hope so.
I don't see it moving. That's what's really frustrating. And that's the same question where you were saying, like, is this what people want? Like, maybe it is what people want. Maybe we're just like kind of deluding ourselves that other people care. I mean, Kacey Musgraves' song got pulled off the radio. Kacey Musgraves.
That was
like,
Biscuits,
which I think is one of the worst songs on her album, but still, like,
why did it get pulled?
I don't think we know. Do we know?
It's like, probably radio stations using PPMs to monitor who's listening. So like, it sends real time data, which isn't perfect, but that's what the standard is now. I think people most likely, they found that people were turning the dial.
Wow.
Or it wasn't testing well in surveys. Kacey is like, I don't know if Kacey wants to be on the radio. Like, Kelsey Ballerini, she got a number one with like she made a song that sounds like a song that's on the radio. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing that Kacey Musgraves, like she didn't make it easy for radio, I think.
She's not catering to them.
Yeah. Which is like, it's awesome that she's doing her thing. And it's yeah, like the Cam song is really good. Is it Burning House? Is that the one that's high right now?
I think it is.
Yeah.
And like Maddie and Tay are awesome. Their album's coming out. So, and those.
It just came out. It came out on Friday, right?
Oh, yeah.
It just came out.
But I think those are artists who are shooting for number ones and shooting for big hits more than Casey is. So well, I hope that they succeed because they're all talented from what I gather.
Well, when you brought up Casey, I thought you were going to ring up Taylor Swift.
Hmm.
I mean, I know you're trying to keep this in like kind of the last calendar year or so, but Taylor is the one that really kind of proved all these theories wrong, right? They're like, oh, there's no market for this. Oh, women don't want a female. And like Maddie and Tay, Cam, Kelsea Ballerini, like they're all trying to do the Taylor thing. Like they're all kind of like similar to what she did. And I don't personally think they're like as good as Taylor, but like her old country stuff, like it was huge. And it was like a huge thing that like this young little blonde girl was like doing more numbers than like Toby Keith, you know, like she was doing like monumental numbers. And I think that opens up a lane for, I mean, even for Miranda, even for Casey, even for the Pistolanis, but like they don't want to do the same thing that she did.
So want to turn the, cause I was recently going through the coverage that Rolling Stone did of Farnborough Festival, which both of you guys worked towards that, right?
Yes.
And it's
was it bad? Well, I was about to rip it apart.
I was going to say, it seemed like the lineup of that was pretty fairly split, male and female, right?
Yeah, it was actually a really good lineup. Although I think all the headliners were men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Brad Paisley, Luke Bryan.
And Dierks.
Yeah.
Dierks. Okay. Okay. And I think Eric Church was in there too.
Church wasn't there.
Oh, no? Okay.
Was he? I missed him. No, there's no way. I would not miss Eric Church. But Maddie and Tay were there.
Yeah.
Brandi
Clark was on the main stage. Okay.
Sturgill was there.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting because I've been kind of like cynical, just maybe like a little cynical as to like how much alt country and like mainstream Nashville country really does cross over, because like I've been saying, I've been following the alternative side for a while now, and I do see how there's a divide. I wonder, like, yeah, it's great, but do people who listen to like country radio really care about Jason Isbell? I wonder that. But seeing someone like Sturgill at a festival like that, that's reaffirming.
Oddly, I went to Lollapalooza earlier this month.
Me too.
Oh. Yes, Sturgill he was on like the second biggest stage there.
And our freelancer who covered his set was raving about his set.
He was great. But he was on a smaller stage at a country music festival. He was in this like tent on the far side.
That's pretty telling.
With a much smaller crowd. Which, yeah, I thought that was, I couldn't believe that. Well, like it made sense in a way, but he killed it both times.
Mm.
I think the divide between mainstream country and alt country comes down to this idea that I think about in music all the time with Poptimism, is intent. Is this artist trying to make money, or is this artist trying to make lasting art? And people really draw that distinction. They really do. And I think that the people that like are drawn to alt country like have this sense, or even with Casey, people are like, yeah, she's not trying to be on the radio, like she's not trying to be Taylor Swift, like
they're drawn
to like this rebel of like, no, money doesn't get to just control everything we do and say. Like, we won't make enough money, we won't be on the radio, fine, like I'm still gonna make music like that. And I think that's a very working class mentality too, which is the weird thing. So technically it should translate to like the big commercial. But I think by the time country gets that commercial.
So wait, you're saying what is the working class mentality?
Well, I think the idea of like money isn't everything, like we're just going to do what we want, is the working class mentality, okay. Which is what I started off this podcast by saying. I think that is like what country music came from. But I mean, I guess commercial country, like.
Because I've also heard arguments, I think you can kind of flip that too and say like when very wealthy people make music or whatever, it's also easier for them to say like, oh, I don't care about making money, I don't care about sales, I'm just going to like make the art I want. And then like on the opposite end of that, you could say like, oh, want like the American dream and wanting to rise up and make money, it could support wanting to be more commercial too.
Right.
And I think mainstream country artists, I'm sure it's true for many of them, that they're like Luke Bryan seems like he's really following his heart and his like passion.
Mm. Like those are the songs he likes.
It's making a lot of money.
Yeah.
And like often maybe mainstream country artists do like a better job of selling the idea of like I'm thinking of like those like Kenny Chesney and Zac Brown songs, like a Chicken Fried kind of song.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like Zac Brown's biggest hit is like, it's all about like, you know, and his latest hit, Homegrown, or the first single from his last album. They're these songs about how like, I don't need possessions.
It's
I just
okay.
need my friends.
Yeah.
And
my,
a lot.
Yeah. And we're just doing our thing.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
He's kind of... I saw him at Shea Stadium or City Field a few weeks ago. And... his new album has a cover of a Jason Isbell song, the song Dress Blues, which is about like going to the funeral of this Marine who died overseas. And it was interesting to see Zac Brown do it. Because at first, I think people didn't recognize it yet because it's like the slow song off his new album. So people started making out because they thought it was like this,
oh my God.
This like love song. And then it ended with like taps or whatever and like the flags waving.
Only a few people left making out then.
Yeah, they kind of had to, they separated.
They caught on.
Yeah. But it works. Like he does a good job with it, at least on the album.
Well, that song's interesting because that's one of the like probably best known Isbell songs from before he got sober and before Southeastern. And I interviewed him earlier this year and he said that I'm not gonna remember the guy's name, but someone that is in Zac Brown's band is friends with Jason Isbell and they've known each other for a long time and have like this long history. So he's like, I figure that guy is the guy that like showed Zac Brown this song.
Yeah.
And it's really cool to me because it's like very much of like connecting back Isbell's career from like the very beginning to when he was like so unknown, like no one knew who he was before Southeastern, like very few people knew who he was, to now with his latest record, Something More Than Free. I feel like, I mean, he's on Heat Seeker charts, like he's like playing pretty big like shows all by himself, like he's really getting up there. And so and he doesn't do songwriting for other writers. He hasn't really ever had a major artist record one of his songs. I asked him. So I think it's cool to see it kind of coming full circle of like a lot of people will be exposed to that song through Zac Brown, which that is nothing but good.
Yeah.
Know?
So, yes, yeah, so it's interesting to dig this up. So there are some people who toe that line, some crossovers who do have a foot in both worlds.
I think Dierks Bentley is a really important one, maybe the most important one among big stars.
I love Dierks Bentley.
He's amazing. Like he made a bluegrass album like as he was. He wasn't quite top tier, but like he was like, I'm going to make a bluegrass album right now, mm-hmm. up on a ridge. And it's really good. And he Patty Griffin was on one of his earlier albums. But he's really interested in sort of bridging these two worlds from the perspective of someone who's a star in one.
Yeah. I've really been into Sam Hunt lately. Billboard put him on the Men of Style cover a couple weeks back. Man, I just thought it was really fascinating how you've got this guy who's like a good-looking jock who actually tried out for an NFL team, was a legit like college quarterback, and he gets shit now for performing with like flat brim caps instead of cowboy hats. He has his name on a backdrop on his stage with like a floral pattern behind it. He covers female R&B singers, and he's still really, really popular. He's got the number one country single right now.
I think Sam Hunt is such an interesting case. Like, it's one of those things where you could never say, like, oh, for sure this will succeed. But once it did, it seems so obvious that you're like, oh, why didn't we do this before? Like, he also covers Drake all the time.
Yeah, that,
and
yeah,
he's, like, really kind of, like, stepped into that lane. What's the name of the song that's number one? Leave the Night On?
No,
House Party.
House Party.
House Party is the number one one now? Well, Leave the Night On is basically a Drake song. He's like, hey, girl, like, everyone else is hitting on you, but I'm hitting on you in my special Sam Hunt way.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And if you didn't like it, you'd be gone by now. It's, like, totally the same logic Drake uses. And, like, it's so much, like, a voicemail or, like, these, like, weird spoken word things and interludes that are, like, becoming, like, charting songs again, you know? I think that the way that he plays with the format of what a country song could be is like really intriguing, and some people are really threatened by that. Like traditional country people don't like Sam Hunt because they're like,
threatened is
bringing
a strong word.
Oh, for sure. I mean, so much about country is like regressive. Like that's the alt rock thing. It's like, this is real country, or not alt rock, alt country. This is real country. Like,
I mean,
no one can
like
ever top
too, but...
no one can ever top Emmylou. No one can ever top Willie Nelson. Like, if that's true, then why are we still trying to make music, you know? Like, you should be able to have an icon that can top the icons from the past. That's why we move forward. So I think anytime that hip-hop or R&B like gets into country, purists are very threatened. Yeah, I think that's the right word.
Yeah,
do you agree?
So. Yeah. I was thinking when you said this podcast was going to be about alt country, well, like, so Sam Hunt has all this rap influence. And that's one of the like things people are railing against in country for the last year or so, like Florida Georgia Line.
And I saw them at Madison Square Garden. They ended their show with like this power mix of hip hop covers.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I mean. That's where we have to say who's against it, you know, because there's a whole section of people that aren't against
right.
it. There's a whole Madison Square Garden of people right. that aren't against it, but people who love Kacey Musgraves or like only like alt country might not like Florida Georgia Line.
Or
might
at least
might
admit
hate
that
them.
It's not for them. But it's interesting to me, like, to think about, and I guess the nature of this podcast, about, like, alternative music. And there's, like, when we talk about alternative country, everyone knows what we're talking about. That's sort of, like, slightly outside Nashville, Americana stuff. But there are, like, over the last 7 years, maybe, there's like, I think there's other alternative countries, like hick hop was like an alternative country of like people even farther out mixing country with rap music. Like Colt Ford was the most popular one. But in his wake, there's this, the record label Muddigger has put out like 5 or 6 compilations of people like, and I think it's really, it's kind of crass and it's like the opposite of Americana,
yeah.
But it is an alt country in a way. I think these people see themselves as like Nashville outsiders.
Yeah.
And if like maybe the Americana people have had a harder time changing the sound of country music, but like that sound has totally changed everything with like Florida Georgia Line or even like, I mean, the Old Dominion song that you send me, mm-hmm. I mean, there's rapping in that.
Mm-hmm. That's Break Up With Her?
Break Up With Him.
Break Up With Him, yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a him, because how could a girl have written the song?
So that stuff has made influence. And yeah, there's just so much going on in country music, which is why I'm like, I've stayed so fascinated in it.
Mm.
And like, just go deeper and deeper.
I think now's a really important time to move things forward, because in covering lots of rock music, I've noticed how, Caitlin, you were talking about just like worshiping the past. Like, you have, no one can be as good as this person. I think and with alt rock being like, no one can be as good as Nirvana, or no one could be as good as The Clash, or with classic rock, no one can be as good as the Beatles or Zeppelin or the Stones. That's just what causes people to be too traditional and mixed genres stagnate and just lose relevance.
Yeah, and like Waylon Jennings was like the outlier, the so-called outlier, was like mid-70s. That's 40 years ago, which is like, that to now is the same as, you know, the 1930s to then.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So you're saying it took them that long for someone like Waylon to shake things up?
No, just the opposite. That like people, I mean, maybe I wasn't around in the 1970s. But for someone to be like, why doesn't country music in 2015 sound like Waylon Jennings?
Right.
But that'd be like going up to Waylon Jennings and being like, you need to sound more like Jimmy Rogers or like some fucking cowboy movie.
And if we just have artists who are copying the past, then we never get like this amazing new thing. Like you're saying, like Waylon Jennings became a huge figure, you know, like became like iconic. And if he had been copying the past, we wouldn't have had that. Or Sam Hunt. Like, if he had been copying Toby Keith, or, I mean, I would argue that that's an influence. Or if he had been copying Kenny Chesney or even Dirks, we wouldn't have, you know, House Party. Like, there's no, that's like, no one sounds like that. So now we have, like, new artists who can, like, kind of forge their own new sound. And then, like you said, I think one of the reasons why rock has become boring to people is because there aren't artists like this, or I'll get in trouble for this, but there isn't as much of an influx of like, let's do this new thing, because everyone's trying to be Nirvana. Everyone's trying to be Pavement. Everyone's trying to be The Clash Part 70. Like, stop, make new music. And, and I think that's the other thing that can be frustrating about an artist like Casey for me, especially as someone who like really loves women and the music that women are making, is like, Casey is not the only artist doing stuff like that. Caitlin Rose, Holly Williams, who is Hank Williams' granddaughter, Nikki Lane, like this whole East Nashville enclave, and they don't get cover stories, that no one talks about them. And it's like, when are we gonna make room for there to be more than one Jason Isbell, more than one Sturgill Simpson? Like, does anyone ever talk about like the 17 other artists who made like albums in that vein? No, there's only the Sturgill. Like, there's only enough room for one alt person, and especially for women. That's so frustrating to me.
Casey's almost an outlier because she's so traditional and like probably more indebted to like Western swing or like 1950s country music,
Countrypolitan.
Yeah, than probably anyone else. And like when she was a little kid, she was a like champion yodeler.
Yeah.
So that's like still with her very much.
From a very small town in East Texas.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess that's why sometimes, well, her new album did frustrate me a little, because I'm like, she's like, I want it to be just like the past. And I'm like, but it's not the past.
I mean, it sounded a lot like her first album.
That was the other
There
problem
was that
with it.
Too. Yeah.
It wasn't, there was no movement.
Yeah. Yeah, there were. I definitely sensed, even being someone who doesn't specialize in country, sensed many different forms, strains of Casey Musgrave's backlash the past couple months.
Well, that's the problem when you only let one person through, is then she has all of our hopes hanging on her. She has every expectation hanging on her, and she's
she like, doesn't want that.
She has to be
one.
The savior of something, and she's like, nope, this is what I want to do. And so for that, I always respect her, because Casey Musgraves made an album that she wanted to make. And that's really important to me. It's not the one I wanted her to make, but it's the one she wants. That counts for something.
I did like I agree. And I'm very curious where she goes from here. Mm-hmm. Like, does she make this album again for a third time? Or like,
she just tries to fuck with us at that point. Like the people writing think pieces.
It did work. I worked in the way of like the lightness of it. I think the lightness of it worked and matched the lyrics of like, be who you are. Don't, you know, that like, be free.
Yeah.
And like the production was so light, especially compared to like Jason Aldean or whoever. So like it fit and it kind of worked, but it did leave me wanting something a little more.
Caitlin, you mentioned East Nashville a minute ago. What is, tell me about that. Is that,
so are you ready to talk about gentrification?
Ooh.
I'm gonna learn something.
So basically,
here.
Oh really?
I don't know Nashville.
Well, I, the person that I taught, I had like an hour long or maybe even longer conversation with this artist named Nikki Lane for a cover story I did for this magazine called Elmore, which I don't think is a print magazine anymore. It's like a super small country magazine that this woman who lives in New York started in the early 2000s and just runs it herself. It's tiny. But anyway, I was doing a country story for them, or a cover story about women in music. And this was in 2013. So it was 2 years ago. And I was talking to Nikki Lane, and she was telling me about East Nashville, which is basically where people who can't afford to live in regular Nashville now kind of live. And obviously a lot of them are musicians, and it started to sound like a lot like Brooklyn to the Manhattan of, like, because the majority of like main Nashville is like all the mansions for the country stars or the record producers. So you can afford to live there if you're like an up and coming artist. So this scene has kind of developed called East Nashville, where it's like a different demographic of people. Like, they're mostly young people, creative types, and they are the ones that are making more of this alt country Americana kind of music. So and Caitlin Rose is a part of that scene as well, and I will ride or die for her forever. I think The Stand-In is one of the loveliest albums of the last 50 years.
Only a Clown.
Oh, isn't
song.
It so good?
That is a gorgeous song.
And fun fact, Caitlin Rose is the daughter of Liz Rose, who co-wrote with Taylor in her very early days. So she's kind of part of like the Taylor Swift machine in her own tangential way. But that's what East Nashville is. And I want to go there.
What I think is really interesting that I'm pulling out of this is the alternative or more boundary pushing side of country music isn't just in like the Luke Bryan flat or the Sam Hunt flat brim or in like the Casey Musgraves tradition. There's a traditional side that can be kind of edgy and go against the man. And then there's like this more newer kind of country that can also go against the man.
For sure. For sure. Well, I mean, even liking Florida Georgia Line. I mean, when did their album first come out? 2012? Was it late 2012?
Right. Because then they get reissued.
Yeah, that's true. Later. That's true, yeah. Like, it wasn't cool to like them. I would argue that it's still not cool to like them, but you have to acknowledge, like, the impact they've had. There's no Sam Hunt without Florida Georgia Line. Like, full stop. Mm-hmm. And so, once again, it's this idea of critical intent. Like, Sam Hunt, so far, seems to be, like, he's critically acclaimed. Like, critics like him. Florida Georgia Line, no, they're not good enough. Like, they're just in it for the money, or they're pushing country in the wrong ways. So it's like, there's not that much of a difference between these two artists. There's just how they're perceived.
One thing I like about being a country critic or a country writer is that, like, I really have no idea who the critically, like, where artists stand critically. Like, with, like, okay, Tame Impala.
Because
like,
there's so much less
structure
for it.
And it's so spread out. And
well, there's no, like, country pitchfork. Like, pitchfork so much determines, like, who's cool and alternative, you know, like, your main arena. There's nothing about that. There's nothing like that for country. But I interrupted you, so keep going.
Oh, yeah, so I don't, like, it's hard for me to tell where, like, Florida Georgia Line is critically or, like, what
really?
That means. I don't know. Like, I know writers who really like them.
Right.
But it's, I don't know.
But I feel like most people writing about country are the ones who already don't care what their peers decided is cool.
Yeah. And I think there's, like, I think critics based in Nashville, I don't know what they think so much. And then there's, like, yeah.
Like, I think they all hate Florida Georgia Line.
Yeah, I think. I think in New York, I think the writers are more open to, like, this sort of stuff because maybe we're a little more distanced from it.
Well, because
we don't know the like East Nashville scene so well.
Yeah,
and a lot of those writers have a huge background in hip hop, so they're like, "This is a really cool new way that hip hop's mutating."
Yeah, because I think if you are the sort of person who enjoys hip hop, you can. If there's a part of country that you're gonna fuck with, it would be like that Sam Hunt, Florida Georgia Line side. It wouldn't be the Casey Musgraves side that sounds like 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. To you, that's just like more like traditional rock guitar kind of stuff. It's similar to that.
Well, I think the problem too, is that once someone like Kacey Musgraves gets through, even if her album isn't that good, like, they'll just say it's good because that's what someone told them to like. You know, like, she's the one on the cover of Fader. She's the one that Pitchfork reviewed. Like, so even a, like, they're not judging her album on merit anymore. They're just like, oh, it she's must be one. Good. She's yeah, the one she's that cool one. It's cool to like. Yeah.
Didn't Sam Hunt play the Fader for it at South By this past year?
And he was very pitchy. I was sad.
Oh, Sam. Like, he was Sam. Nervous. He was yeah, nervous. Maybe so.
It was good, though. Like, I was with like a rap person who I never heard of. He's like, what's this guy's deal? And I'm like, oh, he's like, he's this, you know, he's this really awesome new country guy.
Who was the rapper?
No, it wasn't a rapper.
Oh.
It was like a...
It was like a rap writer.
You brought a rapper to a Sam Hunt show. You're the real MVP.
I wish I did that. it was, yeah, Manny Fresh. I brought Manny Fresh to...
There you go.
No, but it was like, and at first, it like took this person like a few songs to get into it. But then they're like, oh my God, this is amazing. Because like, these... I mean, country artists compared to a lot of rap artists and a lot of indie or rock artists, like, they're so good at performing live and, like, being entertaining and, like, putting on a great show with great production values. Sure. Yeah, like, they're pros at touring.
Yeah.
So, like, this guy was like, he's, like, really has an incredible stage presence, which is something, if there's something that, like a Pitchfork kind of artist can learn from country music, I feel like it's that.
Those buzz artists, and they get up on stage and they're going to tune their instruments. They're not going to say shit. They're just going to stand there.
Well, going off what you're saying, I've interviewed a lot of rappers, and I've talked to a lot of people who listen like primarily almost only to hip hop or rap. And so many people that come from these communities that are really like based in rap or based in hip hop are so accepting of country. They're like, oh yeah, it's like very similar to us. Like, these are very much two genres that like the rest of the country was like, ew, no, for like so long that they like understand one another. Like, the most open response I've ever got to liking country music has been from people that are totally into hip hop and totally really? Into rap, or rappers themselves. They're like, oh yeah, totally. Like, we get that. We understand it. And even if they're not familiar with like who the newest guy is, like, they have such a different perspective on it than someone who comes from the really like indie rock core, like Pavement is the only god.
Wow. We'll have that person on the next podcast.
Don't invite me.
We'll show them the Range Life. Am I right? The real Range Life.
You're making me think of what this thing people say, and I heard it a lot back in high school. I went to school in central New Jersey.
It's, I know, either, what you're going
to say. I listen to everything except country, or, yeah, I listen to everything except hip-hop.
Well, I'm from Oregon, and people would say both of those together. Mm. I listen to everything except country and hip-hop. And, I mean, that's why I didn't want to like country when I was 12 years old, and I was like, no,
you want to fit in at that
totally,
age.
Totally. And you want to have your own identity, and if your identity is as the only girl that likes country, then that seems really shitty when you're 12.
And like, if you're from somewhere where the people that like country the most are like the ones who are like drunk and fighting at football games,
yeah,
maybe even
yeah.
have Confederate flags, it's like, and you're, you know, or for me, it's like, I'm like 13 and trying to find a different way to live.
Yeah.
Or like looking for some other influences that, you know, turned me away from country at that time. Or at least like Brooks and Dunn.
You know, we made it
Shout
this...
out to Brooks and Dunn.
We made it this far without saying a certain word. But I'm going to say it. Bro country. What do
we
you guys
did good.
About
we
that?
Did a good job.
Yeah. With about 10 minutes without Kacey and almost I don't know how
no,
long without bro.
We're so subversive. Well, we have been talking about bro country, though. Mm-hmm. You're Jason Aldean. Like, I would argue he's one of the first. Yeah, because he's before Luke Bryan.
Yeah.
Well, the dude who made up that term, Jody Rosen, was my neighbor in Red Hook, like, when he made up that term.
Did you hear, like... Was he like, yes, I've got it.
I think that Jody didn't even realize it would be like a thing when he made it up. The Guardian just did like a long interview with him about it. And he was like, I was talking about like these fratty dudes who were like taking over country. Like, I didn't think it was going to be this huge thing. But I think he really like hit the nail on the head as far as like what was being accepted and what was being kind of shunned. And like men who have this very traditional heteronormative, like very like traditional masculine role were the ones that were succeeding. And like, I mean, even Kenny Chesney has like a lot of like really heartfelt or slow songs and like doesn't have a lot of songs about like trucks and things like this. Like I would argue he's like one of the ones that's like right before this kind of thing, which is very much the Red Cup, the partying, the like let's just like hook up as much as we can. And this is almost more like a generational shift even than like a genre shift. Like that's much more just like how our lifestyle is.
Yeah. Bro country does capture the like keg party aspect of that wave of popular country. Although it also like, I mean, a term can only do so much. But like we were talking about earlier, like people like Luke Bryan are like, they're more loved by women fans than by men.
Yeah, I love Luke Bryan.
But yeah, you've done a good job writing about
this sort of stuff. That's why it's tough is because it's like, I don't want there to not be Luke Bryan. I see this music for the value it has. There's times in my life when I really want to hear this. The reason why it's tough is because I think that Casey should have just as much success as him. She should have just as much of a share of the pie as him. And I think it's set up for the Caseys to fail and the Luke Bryans to succeed to the point where you get this like super just saturated market of the top 12 songs are dudes and they're all pretty much about the same thing. And like, even if they're all good songs and I like all of the artists, I don't hear my voice. I don't hear my perspective. And I really want to hear that. Like, it's, like, based on this, like, really sexist inequality, like I said, that I think stems back to who's running Nashville. Like, really running Nashville. Like, the top 10 dudes running Nashville. They don't want Casey to succeed. Because she threatens them. That's the second time I've used that verb today.
And heteronormative, all these guys making music about hooking up with girls. Is this just a country thing? Does the bro country, does that exist outside of country?
There are bros. There's definitely an indie bro.
But that's not really a topic in indie rock. Like, you don't hear a lot of indie rock.
I don't think it's a thing in indie rock, really.
What you're saying hip-hop? Is that what you're...
Do you think, like, there's... It's just a different kind of bro or a very, like... Like straight male centric hook up with girls party mentality that just is pervasive in the popular music.
Well, that's a very good question. I think that that is like a very like fertile breeding ground for it. Breeding ground because, like I said, it's these very conservative people and they have like very traditional ideas about marriage and men and women and like the way that sex operates like throughout their lives is like you marry this girl, the good girl, but you don't marry the one that you hooked up with in the bro country song. And like, that's like their world. Whereas hip hop, I would argue, like, has a little bit more diversity, but I mean, I think you're right. I think it's not just in country, but I think it's more of a reflection of like what the people listening to it often end up acting out in their own lives.
So yeah, I think there's like a bro identity that's strong in both in hip hop and in country. But you're saying that the headspace, what they accept, their set of values, is a lot more conservative in the country bro, which I think is pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's also like pretty easy in hip hop to be. I mean, I wouldn't say easy. I think it's easier than it is in country to be a totally new kind of artist and be very underground in hip hop and then make your way up Like think about Vince Staples. Like he's blowing up this year and last year, like. Almost like the same amount of people who love Jason Isbell had like heard of him, you know, and now he's like becoming very much like a national presence. So
or Fetty Wap, like there couldn't be a country Fetty Wap.
Oh, so true. That's a great example.
And even just how some of the highest selling hip hop albums this year, like Drake and Kendrick, are pushing so many genre boundaries and are so artistically like forward. And there's just not really a place in country right now for someone to do that and be commercially successful.
I think a lot of the, I mean, like the Zac Brown album, if just talking about albums that like push boundaries, is like, it's crazy. There's like this, like, there's like a lounge song and there's like, there's all these, it goes in so many different directions. And it's like, I mean, they really went for it. Like,
but once again, once you're at his level, that's when you're back to that spot of like, I'm just going to make music that makes me happy, because he's achieved the empire. So he like has that freedom again.
Yeah.
I don't think if he was like starting off, that would be like the makeup of his album at all.
Yeah. Same with like Eric Church's album, where it's like they get to a point where they can explore, make a ridiculous album, which isn't always as good as the earlier albums, but they, you know, like there's a lot of people that are going for it.
You should listen to the Eric Church album. Have you listened to it?
Just once when it came out.
Yeah.
Once or so.
That isn't quite in the calendar year, but I think that was like definitely a really good example of what you're talking about.
Yeah, like late 2014, mid 2014.
But that was like a lot of like hard rock kind of stuff, which was interesting because there's been somewhat of a vacuum in that section of like the music world too, as far as like Nickelback used to be like one of the biggest bands in the country, and now they're like everyone hates them. Same with Creed, and like those are kind of what some of those Eric Church songs sounded like.
Well,
like,
yeah, that's the place for guitar centric music right now.
And Aaron Lewis like is a country singer now from Stained, you know.
Like so
the
many
Brantley Gilbert like, stuff is
so many. Can you cut this part out? But I'm writing a think piece about old rock stars going country.
Yeah,
because it's a huge trend.
And I think there was always a decent crossover of the fan base of something like Nickelback or Three Doors Down with people who also like country music.
Right. Yeah,
so it makes sense.
Well, it's very much like the populist working class people. Again, like I said, like if you were like raised in like a country club, like you just don't have as much rage, or I guess it manifests in a different form. Maybe I can't judge.
Never made it as a wise man, couldn't make it as a poor man stealing. Yeah.
Prophet of our time.
Yeah.
Prophet of
our Chad Kroeger.
And of course, Hootie is now killing it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Although,
there you go.
Not mad. Not mad
yeah,
about that one.
He's good.
I saw him at Stagecoach. Mm. And let me tell you, there was a lot of like parents there, and they were having a great time.
I bet.
I was like, I just can't be mad at this. His version of Wagon Wheel is fire too.
Yeah, it is.
So that concludes another episode of The Alt and Our Stars. Remember, you can subscribe to the podcast by clicking the iTunes link towards the bottom of the story. You can also go to iTunes, the same place, same link, and listen to some archived episodes. Lots of good, interesting stuff in there. Recently, we've had Silver Sun Pickups, Potty Mouth, Chris from Vampire Weekend, Albert Hammond Jr. on the podcast. So you can dig back into those. And a new episode runs every Friday afternoon on Billboard.com. So keep it here next week. Until then, have a good weekend, everybody. Peace.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.